When I was a kid, I absolutely loved parades. The problem was, almost everybody, including kids my own age, were taller than I was. And there were thousands of people arrayed around any parade route, so I couldn't see or actually hear much, except muffled stuff. So my dad would hoist me up on his shoulders. You know how parents do that for kids, right? So I had a clear view. So I could see Santa coming, or the Easter Bunny, or leprechauns, or sparklers for the 4th of July. And I'd get to wave and yell, and nobody told me to be quiet. I love that waving and yelling. Now, we did a bit of that this morning. But I must say that those of you following after me were a little wimpy there. This is the one day of the year when we staid Episcopalians are supposed to be out of control, a little bit raucous and noisy and tattery. It is no accident that the choir goes before, and they, of course, keep perfect time. They know where they are in verses. And the people, the sound changes as it moves, so we're about a half a verse behind them. That's okay. It's supposed to be raggedy. Parades aren't neat. And I can tell you that the initial parade that started this whole deal was not neat. The reason, of course, that we do this is that we commemorate every year Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem, which introduces the great mysteries of Holy Week. And this business of waving palms with wild abandon and great rejoicing has been around since at least the 4th century, when Jesus' final entry into Jerusalem apparently happened. But I get ahead of myself. There once was a man who did such wonderful things and said such amazing things that people followed him. Sometimes they didn't even know what they were doing, but he was so charismatic and true that they followed him. Sometimes, because they didn't know him, they'd ask him who he was. And instead of saying something like, "I'm Vicky Garvey and I was born in Baltimore," he said things like, "I'm the Good Shepherd and I know each one of my sheep and each of them knows me." And sometimes he'd say, in a country where a lot of people were starving, "I am the bread of life and anybody who comes to me will never be hungry again." And he loved to talk about a thing that we could call the commonwealth of God. Because in the commonwealth of God, everybody had everything they needed. Nobody was in want. Everybody shared with everybody else. When people said, "We don't understand that," he would explain it like this. He'd say, "You know, that woman, that widow woman who has very little money, and one day, Saturday I think it was, she lost one dime, and she was very concerned about the loss of that dime. So she scoured the house, and when she found it, she was so excited that she threw a party that cost much more than a dime for her whole neighborhood." Or the commonwealth of God is like a shepherd. Now, we all know shepherds. I mean, they did 2,000 years ago. They knew shepherds. This guy had 100 sheep, pretty good, but one of those sheep got lost. It did not stray, it got lost. And when the shepherd found it, he was so ecstatic that he threw a party for his kith and kin. Or the commonwealth of God is like a parent who lost a child. And when that child came home, he was so overcome with thankfulness that he threw an extravagant party. You know, the fatted calf and the ring and all that stuff? It was a prodigal party that he threw because he was so excited about the return of a child. Jesus was passionate about all this. He was passionate about God and the things of God. He was passionate about people. Every kind of person, fat or skinny, rich or poor, young or old, in or out. And those passions of his, that great love of his, brought him to Jerusalem, this final week of his life and led to another kind of passion, which you'll hear about later in this service and you'll hear for the rest of the week. But today is about, or this part of the service is about parade, so we're going back to the parade. There once was another man, same time, same place. He also did what some people would have considered wonderful things. And he also said some fairly awesome things. Though a lot of people thought that what he did and said were in fact awful, hurtful, horrible, destructive, defective, and death-dealing. Now, lots of people followed him too, but they followed him because it was the politic thing to do, because he was powerful. They had to. Nobody needed to ask who he was. They knew. His name was Pontius Pilate, and he represented the power of Rome. And he loved to talk about a thing that he called the peace, P-E-A-C-E, of Rome. If you want to get scholarly about it, it's called the Pax Romana. The problem with the peace of Rome is that it was peaceful for nobody except Romans and the upper classes of the Romans. Now, they too had parties, but their parties were only for the haves, for the wealthy, for the powerful, for the A-lists of the first century. Forget ordinary people like you and me, much less people who were lonely or lost or left out. They just didn't count. Rome was his passion, and he guarded his precious piece of Rome with a vengeance. And his passion for this piece of Rome often led to death, but always of somebody else. Now, one spring day, maybe like this one, this is a pretty nice spring day, except in Jerusalem at this time of year it's much hotter, there were two parades going into the city of Jerusalem. Both parades were scheduled because Passover, that holiday of holidays for the Jewish people, was coming up that week. From the east came Jesus, riding on a colt, climbing down from the Mount of Olives, coming to town to celebrate with his friends and family that festival which commemorated and founded their freedom. Now, people in Jerusalem had heard amazing things about him, how he'd healed the sick and raised the dead on occasion, how he'd welcomed those who were pariahs to their own families and communities, how he'd loved the unloved, how he'd fed everybody with food and a kind word and a sense of belonging. He was good to everybody, no matter who, all the time. No questions asked, no tests to be passed, no taxes to be paid. No wonder they welcomed him, yelling hosannas till they were hoarse and waving palm branches a lot more enthusiastically than some of you did. The children got it right, right? They were doing this, folks, not, right? Okay, those people waving these palms were really excited about him, about the commonwealth that he talked about and that he promised was available to everybody all the time. They were excited about their futures and the future of their country with him. For them, he was already the new Passover, the Feast of Freedom, personified. He came proclaiming and portraying the commonwealth of God that was open to all. Then there was that other parade. It came from the west, from a place called Caesarea Maritima, which was the resort home of Pontius Pilate. He and his retinue came not to celebrate Passover, but to threaten it and its reminder of freedom, to quell the disturbances that they were sure were going to happen in this city when more than 100,000 people would pour into that very small walled city within the week. Now, the Pilate parade was not noisy nor was it happy. It was very, very orderly. Think Rome. Think Cecil B. DeMille, Rome, right? They didn't have to ask who Pilate was. They already knew him as a tyrant who taxed people out of their farms and homes and livelihoods, who forced poor people into slavery, who seemed to delight in crucifying by the thousands everybody who dared cross him or his passion for Rome. A lot of people think that the only person ever crucified in the history of the world was Jesus. When Jesus was a teenager, Pontius Pilate crucified 6,000 people within spitting distance of where Jesus was going to school. That's how bad this guy was. Now, nobody in his parade was yelling Hosanna or waving palms. It was only silence and the plodding of soldiers and horses' feet and an occasional grunted command. No hope, no exuberance or excited expectations along that parade route. Pilate and his imperial cavalry came proclaiming and portraying the power of Rome, ready to crush anyone who would disagree with them or their great passion. So once there were two men leading two parades, two visions of life, two passions in conflict. Within 5 days, they would meet. Their visions and passions would inevitably clash, and one of them would die. His hopes and dreams for a better, more ethical, more equitable, more hospitable, and welcoming vision of life dashed and apparently dead with him. This past summer, this is in real time now, 2017. This past summer, I was in Jerusalem for the second time in my life. It just so happened that Jerusalem Day fell during the week we were there. Now, does anybody know what Jerusalem Day is? That's what I thought. I didn't either. It's something like the 4th of July quadrupled. It's a celebration of the reunification of the city of Jerusalem after the 1967 Six-Day War. Among other things, it, like Passover, is a day to celebrate freedom from oppression. There was a parade, and tens and tens and tens of thousands of people poured once more into that ancient walled city from all directions, waving Israeli flags and yelling happily and raucously in Hebrew. It was so exciting to watch that we got sucked right into it, yelling and screaming with the best of them, marching, catching their enthusiasm. Except as we got into the old city itself, there was something like a non-parade going on. Except for the mostly Arab market proprietors in the souks of the ancient city, for whom this was not a day of celebration, but a reminder of defeat and a return to occupation status. One day, excitement and exuberance for some, dread and fear and distrust for others. It was, in the end, a little unsettling and confusing for us. Now, I have to imagine that some of the people caught between the two parades on the first Palm Sunday thousands of years ago must have felt a similar sense of bipolar unease. I wonder about those people in the first century. Everybody in the two parades, as well as those on the periphery of all that hoopla, they all had a decision to make. In the end, which parade do I join? Whose passion would they embrace, and whose vision follow? And us, some 2,000 years later? On the face of it, it's easy. We're Christians. So in a way, and with hindsight, it seems obvious. We're unambiguously and stalwartly members, enthusiastic, except when you're at the end of your line, enthusiastic members of the Jesus Parade. After all, Jesus, although he did die at the end of the week that we're about to begin, neither his passion nor his vision died, which is why we're sitting here, or in my case, standing here on a Sunday morning. Still, I have to wonder, in our everyday lives, the lives that we live between Sunday afternoon and next Saturday night, in whose parade are we demonstrably participants? Have we become anesthetized to the status quo, to some people having it all and some having nothing, to the necessity of haves and have-nots? Have we given in to the will of the majority who no longer subscribe to the need for change, for fairness and honesty and justice for everybody? Who's at the head of our parade? And are we willing to be hoisted up, metaphorically at least, on somebody else's shoulders so that we can publicly bear witness to the passion we say we embrace and the vision we follow and enact? I wonder.